your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstand Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
If you were hard up for money, you might have a yard sale. Cut off the cable. Shop for clothes at the Salvation Army store. But would you ever sell your soul? Are you even sure what your soul is? The dictionary defines it as the immaterial essence, animating principle, or actuating cause of an individual life. What else than that do you truly know about yours? The questions regarding the reality and importance of the soul and its distinction from the body are among the most essential problems in philosophy. Are the body and soul two independent elements that happen to be formed together, or two incomplete forms that need each other to be whole? Which would be more disturbing, no such thing as God or no such thing as the soul? To many, the soul was considered the spiritual aspect of the physical form. Our bodies may become ill with such simple things as indigestion or a fatal illness like cancer. But science has made us mostly familiar with the causes and curses of each. But all we have are religious leaders and their texts telling us about our soul. In the early 1900s, Dr. Duncan McDougall attempted to give a definitive answer to the most basic question, does the soul really exist? Dr. McDougall placed near-death patients on a sensitive scale and simply weighed them, noting any changes upon the individual's last breath. While his test could hardly be called definitive, he did hypothesize from changes in the scale he could not identify that the soul had weight, and therefore must be. If there is a soul, then there must also be those who have overlooked or disregarded theirs. There is the lost soul, someone who is not fitting with the rest of society. Because isn't that what true believers feel? The individual becoming one with the collective, your soul rejoining with the greater presence upon death. There is also the empty soul, the blackened soul, the withered soul, the forgotten soul, and the soul for sale. While many of us could probably name a person or two meeting the above descriptions, did you think you would find one of them on eBay? Throughout life, there have been books and movies about men selling their souls, but recently it happened in everyday life when a Chicago atheist swapped his soul to an ex-minister for $504. In the end, the seller agreed to attend at least 10 different church services, write about how they affected him, if in any way, and if he finds the something he feels has been missing, then possibly pursue it further. The buyer agreed to donate the $504 towards an organization called the Secular Student Alliance. Would you sell your soul for the money, for the excitement, for the despite? Let someone else have ownership of your spiritual self and the fate of your afterlife or something you want or need immediately. For many, the thought that your soul is our most basic, pure self carries them through the occasional sins of everyday life. For me, just another good question for which I have no answer. All right, 11:05 here on the wake-up call. Don't you like getting started? You didn't go to church today, so we'll bring you a few little sermonizing thoughts to get things rolling. By the way, I don't have my normal headphones with me, so everything sounds like I have a cold. If that's different from my normal nasal voice, I apologize. Our guest today, Daily Progress political columnist Bob Gibson. Bob, how are you?
Good. Good to join you, Rick.
And how is your soul feeling today?
It's feeling nice and glad to be back in Charlottesville, not sitting down in Richmond watching people get nothing done on the budget.
Watching others sell their soul.
Well, rent at least.
Rent. Our topic today is the 2006 Virginia General Assembly. What has happened, what hasn't happened, what should have happened, what might happen in the future, because, as you stated, they're still not finished, right? Although they were supposed to finish already.
According to the Virginia Constitution, yesterday was the last day. But according to the work that they've done, they've got probably a few more months to go. And I think they'll be there through a good, decent part of May.
A few more months?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole thing is only supposed to take
60
two
days.
Months, right?
60 days, says the Virginia Constitution, but they're gaming the system. They know if they go to the wall and sit there and don't move toward the other side might come toward them. And there's really very little public pressure on them right now to do much of anything.
All right, well, let's lay a little groundwork here. Bob, you are the political columnist for the Daily Progress. How did you get the job? What makes you interested in the job? How long have you had the job? What makes you the expert to bring in for today's topic?
Well, I'm not an expert, but I have been at the Daily Progress in various jobs. I was a political reporter back in the late 1970s, early 1980s, and then became city editor and did that job at the Progress for about 7 years, and then was special projects editor and did a two-year study of the area's court systems, disparities, racial disparities in sentencing in the Charlottesville and Albemarle courts, and then got back into what I love doing, which is covering politics and government at the state level.
A special projects editor.
Yeah, we don't even have one of those anymore, but it was a good job.
All right, well, if you say so, I'll have to buy that. Because it couldn't have been that good of a job if they don't have one anymore. Or maybe you set the bar so high.
I retired it.
that was it. All right. Well, back to the topic at hand, the 2006 Virginia General Assembly. Now, you mentioned that the Constitution says 60 days, but that's actually in alternating years, correct?
Right. There's a 45-day session in odd-numbered years and a 60-day session set in the Constitution in even-numbered years, rather. So the even-numbered years are the budget years, and this is 2006, if I'm...
Yes.
On time. And they were supposed to have a budget wrapped up by yesterday, but they're not even close. They're very close on many parts of the budget, and they're not close on transportation, which is the major sticking point for them this year.
And this is not the first time that this sort of thing happened.
It keeps happening. Since the Republicans have been in control of the Virginia General Assembly starting 6 years ago, three of those years they have not been able to agree on a budget in time.
Now, is that something that we should blame the Republicans?
Well, which Republicans? I mean, basically, we've got two Republican parties warring with each other in Richmond right now. You've got the more moderate Republican Party of the Virginia Senate, which wants to invest more money and tax people higher to improve Virginia's transportation system. And then you've got the People's House, as they like to call themselves, the House of Delegates, which has 57 Republicans out of 100. And those 57 are in lockstep like they haven't been in recent years. I mean, they are really tight. They're really holding together. And that block is prepared to hold out into June. I'm certain June, maybe even later. Later would be a real problem because they might close down the state government. If there isn't a budget by July 1, there's going to be a real, real problem. But I think they're going to go up toward that date and sit on their position, which is no new taxes for transportation.
All right, so one of my questions here is what have been the biggest issues of this year's session? And so we'll start with that one, because budget / transportation appeared to be the biggest issue.
Well, that is the biggest issue, and the governor defined it as such. He campaigned. Of course, he sort of changed his tune since his campaign. He campaigned as someone who wanted to lock up transportation money for transportation and not keep borrowing the transportation trust fund or taxes for transportation to put into other parts of the budget. And they haven't done that. I mean, he proposed doing that, and they shot him down. The House of Delegates killed the bills that would have locked up the transportation trust fund to a greater degree. So basically, he said, well, if we if we lock it up, then we'll talk about higher taxes. Well, he couldn't lock it up. Those bills were killed, so he started talking about higher taxes immediately.
What makes this... Now, you mentioned that they're in greater lockstep, or those who don't want to tax anymore. Why are they in greater lockstep?
Well, because there are only 57 of them. There used to be a lot more. But as they've seen their majority shrink in the House of Delegates, they've become a more cohesive unit, sort of out of self-protection. They're down to the basic Republican districts that are very, very hard for Democrats to win in the state. This is still a Republican-leaning state, despite Tim Kaine's victory for governor over Jerry Kilgore last November. So the 57 seats the Republicans occupy, with two Republican-leaning independents joining them to make 59, is a pretty cohesive block this year. They're a fairly conservative bunch, and they really think that they have a solid position to sit on, that there is no public outcry for higher taxes for transportation. And they're right through most of the state. Certainly in their districts, they're not hearing from their constituents, we want to raise our taxes to pay for transportation projects, especially for transportation projects up in Northern Virginia, which is where the greatest need is. So there's a reason we're at loggerheads, and we're going to stay there for a while.
Well, let's get into the loggerhead part a little more. If we have two groups sort of butting heads here in terms of what needs to be done and what should be done, you've defined part of one. Let's lay that out a little more on the map type basis for the listeners and callers.
Well, the Republican majority in the House of Delegates occupies a number of seats that are rural. Their strongest base is now the rural base. They have a large number of seats that are suburban. And suburban taxpayers across Virginia, including Northern Virginia right now, and certainly even in this area, are fed up with the dramatic rise in assessments on their homes and therefore the dramatic increases in their real estate taxes. They're not in the mood to pay higher taxes for transportation, except in Northern Virginia, where actually you could find a majority who would favor higher taxes for transportation improvement because they're stuck in so much traffic up there. Through most of the rest of the state, that is not the problem, and it's certainly not the reason that most people want to see their tax bills go up. You know, it takes a rare civic-minded, commonwealth-minded citizen down in the southern half of Virginia to want to pay higher taxes to pay for roads elsewhere.
So why is does Tim Kaine fall into that collective-minded, civic-minded individual who understands the need for the state as a whole to have better transportation?
I think Tim Kaine and the Republican-controlled Virginia Senate are looking at a longer-term fix for transportation, which really hasn't seen any increases in its budget in 20 years. There have been increases in transportation spending, but they aren't the kind of permanent, sustainable funding that the transportation projects really require, because transportation projects, as you know, take a long time to get built. They go through a long planning stage. In Charlottesville, it's about 30 years before anything gets built. But, you know, in most of the state, it's 10 to 12 years.
Low blow.
And, you know, I think the Senate and the governor are looking at a longer-term perspective for transportation. The House of Delegates is saying, look, we're going to put a lot of money in from this wonderful surplus we have next year, but we don't want to raise taxes or find a sustainable new source of revenue for transportation. That's not our immediate concern. So the House has a position that puts $600 million or more into transportation funding increases, and the Senate has one, and the governor has one, that puts more than $1 billion a year more into transportation projects, including some rail.
Is that part of... you mentioned the budget, you mentioned the surplus. Is that part of why a variety of state delegates and senators aren't interested in raising taxes? Is because, at least the moderates, because they did so 2 years ago under the theory that, oh, look how shorthanded with funds we are, and then suddenly, you know, 6 or 9 months later, we're millions and millions of dollars in the black?
They had more immediate needs 2 years ago. They had education needs that were unmet and demonstrably unmet. They had law enforcement needs that were going unmet and demonstrably unmet. Those were immediate needs that politically were much easier to sell You know, giving teachers and sheriff's deputies raises, buying new equipment, those kinds of things, adequately funding the public schools, were an easier sell 2 years ago than increasing taxes to build roads where they're needed and other transportation projects where they're needed elsewhere in the state, as far as most, you know, voters are concerned.
All right, 11:16 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about the Virginia General Assembly, the whys and why nots, et cetera, with Daily Progress political columnist Bob Gibson. Feel free to dial in. Stu's here today answering the phone, passing you through 979-0919 for the local folks, 1-877-967-6762. That's 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. If you're a little further out and need the toll-free use, we are reaching out to Lynchburg and Amherst and Dover in the Valley and up towards Culpeper and out east, I believe, into Fluvanna. So, and all this stuff applies to you, and Bob knows all about it, right, Bob?
I don't think so, but I do know that actually most of our individual delegates and senators had a pretty good session, because a lot of the stuff that was done was smaller bills that they actually did pass, that they actually did put through to accomplish something. They were just narrow, targeted measures. They just couldn't agree on the really big item, which is transportation funding and a permanent source or a more sustainable source of funding for transportation. Higher education, for example, did quite well in the budget that is not yet agreed upon because of the transportation portion. Higher education, you know, UVA gets a lot of new money. In fact, the only part of the higher education system that is complaining right now is the community college system, because in the House of Delegates version of the budget, there would be $28 million fewer dollars for the community college system than there is in the Senate side. So the community college presidents are even, you know, talking publicly about preferring the Senate budget, which is getting some of them in trouble. One of them wrote a letter to the editor in the Daily Progress and then found his boss, the community college system chancellor in Richmond, called before a House committee saying, well, why are your presidents talking trash about our budget in the House?
Oh, you know, you talk about how the, what phrase did you use? The narrow targeted bills were a little more popular or a little more successful.
They can get those through. There was no...
But in the federal level, the narrow targeted bills are the ones that get people all pissy.
Well, it depends on whether you're talking about earmarks, which is the real problem in Washington right now. You know, you pass a budget and everybody has this little earmark in for an Alaska bridge or, you know, some other kind of project that is viewed by most people as pork. You know, Virginia does pork, but it does it in a more human scale.
That's very thoughtful of them. One of your recent columns, you mentioned the North-South model of Virginia.
And Virginia is a very, you know, the Virginia electorate today is not the Virginia electorate of 20, 30 years ago. 20, 30 years ago, this was a Democratic state, and this was a more monolithic state politically. It has become a much more diversified electorate, and most of that diversification is happening in Northern Virginia and the urban corridor that stretches down into Tidewater, urban Tidewater. We have now hundreds of thousands, millions of new people in this state. Many of them, of course, view Charlottesville as the kind of place they like to come to. So we're having that kind of growth in Charlottesville, Albemarle, Fluvanna, Greene. You know, those counties are now experiencing the kind of growth that Northern Virginia, where I grew up, saw starting, you know, 30, 40 years ago. Northern Virginia has exploded and is still exploding. The people who move into the state bring their partisan political affiliations with them, and many of them move down from the north. So we are seeing a great change, really, in the Virginia electorate. And you know, there are a lot of new groups that we didn't have. There are more Islamic worshipers in the state of Virginia now than there are Episcopalians.
That's interesting.
Not yet in public office, but they vote.
All right, 11:20 here on the Wake Up Call. Feel free to dial in 979-0919, WNRN Rocks. Let me take a moment. The markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly cloudy today with a beautiful 75 to 80 degrees. Partly cloudy with a slight chance of rain tonight. Lows 50 to 55. Partly cloudy tomorrow. Again, 80 to 85 in March. Right now in the valley, clear and 74. Partly cloudy in Lynchburg and 76. And a little cloudy in Charlottesville and 76.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And we also want to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. They are featuring state-of-the-art travel gear from Eagle Creek. And if your travel gear is taking you somewhere warm, like right outside, Blue Ridge has sandals from Teva and Reef, shorts from the North Face, and warm weather pants and shirts from the North Face and Ex Officio. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville, the Mountain Inn at Wintergreen, and at BRMS.com. And don't forget, we want to thank Ann Evans, Mike Henrietta, and Ruth Stone for their generous support during the Fall Fund Drive. It's because of people like them, as well as program underwriters like Java Java and Stanton Crew, that we have a program like the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. So stay tuned, tell a friend, and get ready to support us with the upcoming Spring Fund Drive beginning March 20th. All right, back to our topic at hand, the Virginia General Assembly 2006 session. Daily Progress columnist Bob Gibson here in the studio. Bob, let me ask you, it seems to me that it was just in the past year or two or so that the Tidewater area and the Northern Virginia area both had something on their voting card.
They did a couple of years ago.
About giving themselves tolls or raising money for their own transportation problems, and they voted against it.
They voted it down, and they voted it down for various reasons. There was an odd coalition that took those referenda and trashed them. The odd coalition was the anti-tax folks on, you know, the conservative side, who just don't want to see an increase in taxes for something they view as inefficient government, VDOT. And then the slow growth folks, who combined with them in a very effective campaign to defeat those referenda, because they see the transportation solutions being offered by the state as being too highway oriented, too many, you know, big new roads going out into the suburbs and opening them up for more development. So they wanted to see a transportation system remade into something that's a little more urban and transit friendly, and not as highway dependent.
So why should the state as a whole help these people?
Which people?
Well, either group, but the folks in general who were on the losing end of a Democratic vote in Northern Virginia and the Tidewater region.
Well, the reason that you have to consider their transportation needs is that they are the economic engine of Virginia. And if that economic engine gets clogged and choked, as it is becoming clogged and choked, it's going to stifle the growth of Virginia's economy. They pay the taxes that build the roads and pay for the schools and the teachers everywhere in Virginia. For every dollar in new taxes raised in Northern Virginia, only 62 cents comes back to Northern Virginia. The rest of it is sent to poorer parts of the Commonwealth that are not as economically vibrant and not yet as clogged up in their transportation.
All right. We were talking earlier about how the two sides in the General Assembly, those who are for the taxes that will help clean the clog, and those who are against it because they don't want the tax purposes, not because they're thinking about the economic needs. Which is worse, voting for the tax towards transportation or not aiding the long-term transportation problem? Who does the public like less?
That answer probably varies year by year, but what it's going to require to get a solution is some kind of new thinking about transportation. It's going to require a more creative mix of transportation. It's going to require fixing I-81 by getting trucks off I-81 and putting them on the Norfolk Southern Rail that runs right up the I-81 corridor. You could put, you know, 20% of the truck traffic tomorrow if you immediately started terminalizing the trucks in, say, the Knoxville area, putting them on trains and sending them up to Harrisburg, you could take a tremendous load of traffic off of I-81. There was a plan, it's been unfunded by the federal government, to take I-81 and make it a 12-lane superhighway with tolls for trucks only. That plan didn't get the money that it needed out of Washington, so it's pretty much dead. They tried to drive a stake through it in the General Assembly session, and the development interests that want the expansion of I-81, you know, prevented the legislation that would drive the stake through it, but it's pretty much dead anyway. Governor Kaine is talking about taking I-81 and doing fixes in the most dangerous parts and the most congested parts of I-81. So you know, there are all sorts of different and creative ways to address Virginia's transportation without just building a lot of new highways.
Well, even if I think I read this in one of your columns, although I may have picked it up somewhere else, that Republican Senator George Allen came into Richmond and met with a variety of other Republicans and said, hey, we should have tolls on the highways.
He did. He met with, you know, he used to come down to Richmond after he left the governorship and went up into the Senate and meet with the joint Republican caucus of the General Assembly, the House and Senate Republicans together. Well, that joint caucus no longer exists. In fact, they split a couple of years ago into two caucuses, and he met separately, you know, behind closed doors on Monday with each caucus. And he came out, and a bunch of us gathered around him and said, you know, what did you tell those folks, George? And he said, well, I did not endorse either of their transportation plans. You know, I think we need new roads in Virginia and other forms of transportation, and I think we have to pay for it, and I think we need user fees to go into that mix. So he said, whatever the final result is, I'm going to support it. Whatever the House and Senate agree on is going to be a Republican plan because, you know, the Republicans control each chamber. I'm not saying which one is better. I'm just saying that, you know, consider user fees. And tolls for new roads, not tolls for existing interstates. That would require congressional approval, and they'll look at that. But, you know, Virginians don't want to pay tolls on interstates that the tolls have been taken off of. But I think the policymakers think that Virginians would pay tolls for new roads. And George Allen endorsed that.
All right, let's jump to a couple of the other interesting topics that I found came out of this year's General Assembly, and at any point, you're always welcome to toss in any of the things that you found interesting. We did a show a couple weeks ago on the no smoking in public bills. Is that ever going to actually go through, or is that just something that makes nice headlines?
It got a lot farther this year than it's ever gotten before by passing the Virginia Senate by 3 votes. But it died on a unanimous vote in a House of Delegates subcommittee. I think it was a 6-0 vote that killed that bill. You know, they changed the rules in the House of Delegates this year to allow subcommittees to, in effect, kill bills. And this is one they wanted to kill at the first opportunity in the House of Delegates. So they sent it to a subcommittee that heard the bill and decided, you know, 6-0, Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, moderates, we're not going to take this away from Virginia's businesses, the right to decide for themselves whether to allow smoking. And that was Governor Kaine's position as well. So the House and Governor Kaine were in total agreement. The Senate narrowly passed the anti-smoking bill that would have required no smoking in restaurants across the state. No, that's not going to pass anytime soon. But it did get a lot farther and surprised a lot of people this year at how far it got.
Do you think that Mrs. Reeves, I can't think of her first name. It's either Dana or Diana.
Yeah.
She passed away from lung cancer, but supposedly never smoked a cigarette in her life.
Right.
And obviously, I think that that's going to give secondhand smoke folks whole new leg to stand on.
The good thing about the discussion this year is that there was a lot more discussion. And there was a lot more discussion about the effects of secondhand smoke. I have 2 daughters who've worked in restaurants in Charlottesville. And they come home not only reeking of cigarette smoke, but complaining about it. One of them's asthmatic. And, you know, they are really affected without ever smoking themselves by other people's smoke. So, you know, it's an issue, and people care about it. And the public perception of smoking has changed so dramatically over the last 10 years. Who knows what Virginia will see in the next 10 years. I just don't think it's going to happen anytime immediately.
Not being the Philip Morris state.
Well, the Philip Morris state, the Virginia General Assembly is a very business-friendly place. Let's put it that way.
It goes back to that whole renting of the soul issue of which we started the show.
You wouldn't want to sell your soul, but, a little rent.
But a little rent during the 60-day process doesn't hurt. 11:31 here on the wake-up call as we talk with Bob Gibson about the General Assembly session for 2006. Feel free to dial us up. Stu is out there. I think he's taking a nap. He said he was up late last night, so dial him and check on him. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. Let me thank Five Guys Burgers and Fries for their support today. They have been SIBO Reader's Choice for Burgers and rated by Zagat Restaurant Survey for 4 years running. Five Guys serves America's standard fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and they're open until 10 Fridays and Saturdays. Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center and coming soon to the Hollymead Town Center and the Downtown Mall, Charlottesville. 975 Guys. All right, looks like somebody's dialed up. Stu's got him on the line. while we wait for that, and I definitely want to toss this out and we'll come back to it, hopefully. Delegate Joe May had an interesting bill that did pass, correct? Became law?
It did. The governor is going to sign it, I believe, and it did pass yesterday during the last hours of the 60-day regular session. But it initially was defeated on the floor yesterday, and it was one of those rare bills that got quickly revived and passed. And it passed by a large margin after it was killed by about 11 votes. So, you wonder how many people really cared about that vote if they were willing to switch their vote at the last minute. But a couple of conservative, Republican, privacy and property rights defenders got up and said, this is a really good bill. It allows you to control the data in your black boxes in your cars. You don't want insurance companies getting a hold of that data because most people don't realize what's in a black box in later model cars. But, two-thirds of the cars sold in 2004 had these black boxes. They not only have 6 months of data on your speed, they can tell you, if you have a GPS device in there, they can tell you where you have been in your car for the last, and I don't know the time period, but they can tell down to the specific address, the specific location on a street where you have been. And a lot of people wouldn't want that data falling into other people's hands.
Right. If the insurance company has my car insurance and my health insurance, and they know how many times I went to Five Guys Burgers and Fries, that might be an issue.
And there are all sorts of other people who might be interested in that data. And now they have to go to court to get it subpoenaed. So Joe May's bill is a good little bill that builds in some protection and keeps that data in the hands of the car owner.
All right. I want to jump on that a little more in a little bit. But, Mark, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Hey, Mark from Charlottesville. Hey, what you got?
Oh, I was just wondering. I had a question about the Kane transportation stuff. The funding was only part of the Kane plan that he put forward, and I was wondering if you could talk about some of the other transportation bills, like specifically controlling land use and all that, and how those have fared in the General Assembly.
That's a good question and a very mixed record. The governor and his allies in the House in the Republican caucus put forward a number of these bills to allow localities to not only tie transportation planning to land use planning, but the strongest of the bills would have allowed a local government to say no to a rezoning if the public facilities, the highways, were not adequate for that development. That bill was killed deader than a snake. But some of the other smaller parts of that did get through. So there are some planning measures that now go into effect. So for the first time, the General Assembly has actually tied the planning of new development to the planning of road projects in a locality and allowed localities to collect the kind of information that they might need to better plan. They really didn't put any stronger measures in this year.
All right, thanks to Mark for dialing us up. Feel free, join him, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. I think Mark was on his cell phone, probably out enjoying the nice day. We will take your cell phone call as well. Stu knows how to patch you through. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, if you need the toll-free line. Let's jump back to that a little bit. Why such a mixed version of bills and reactions to them this time around?
Well, it was really funny because the development community doesn't like any of these bills. You know, developers want the kind of ability they've had in Virginia for years to build where they want, when they want, and have localities have to go asking, begging, hat in hand to Richmond to change anything in their powers. Developers have killed off bills that would give greater zoning authority in terms of slowing growth to localities that want it. This year, those bills, some of them were endorsed or not opposed by the developers. Obviously, the House Republican caucus had put some pressure on the development lobby to say, let a few of these little things through. And they did. They let a few of the little ones through. They just killed the ones that they thought would be most effective in giving local government control.
All right, let's take another call out there. 11:36 here on the wake-up call. We are talking about the 2006 Virginia General Assembly with Daily Progress political columnist Bob Gibson. All right, Stu, rush in. Hand me that card. All right, Paul from Ruckersville. Hey, Paul.
How you doing, Rick?
Hey, what's up?
Got a question for Bob, and I don't know if you're going to bring up the Danny LeBlanc situation in Richmond, former state head of the AFL-CIO, and again, Kane chose him to be a secretary, and traditionally that's always been just a pass-through, and this time the Senate approved it unanimously, but the House on partisan grounds knocked it down. I was wondering if this is politics as usual, or is this the Republicans' way of doing a Newt Gingrich move, or
it was not
Bill
politics
Frist move in solidarity?
It was definitely not politics as usual. It was politics in a very unusual, very partisan fashion in the House of Delegates when they decided to bind every member of the House Republican caucus to vote against the nomination of Danny LeBlanc to be Secretary of the Commonwealth. And they gave a number of speeches blasting his former remarks, critical of large businesses in Virginia, critical of the state's right to work law. They even raised the specter that he would wholesale willy-nilly as Secretary of the Commonwealth be handing out free gun rights to former felons, which is ridiculous. That just doesn't happen. But they decided they were going for a kill, and they bound their caucus, and they voted against Danny LeBlanc. I think this is going to have long-term political implications in Virginia, and it's going to have partisan political implications in next year's House of Delegates elections, because they really angered not only Tim Kaine, who was visibly angry the day that they whacked his nominee to be Secretary of the Commonwealth. Secretary of the Commonwealth is the chief clerk for patronage jobs. It's not a policy position. He doesn't make policy. He doesn't, you know, go out and find his own people to sit on big boards. The governor makes those appointments. He is the clerk who checks out whether they have a conflict of interest. He collects their statements of economic interest. He basically does some employment pre-sorting.
So he's the executive administrator, the secretary kind of guy.
He's the chief clerk for patronage. And every governor of Virginia has been allowed to have a very partisan Secretary of the Commonwealth of his own party. Or, you know, there have been several. One was a member of the Republican National Committee who was put in that job. And the Democrats who controlled the legislature at the time didn't, you know, nix her. So this is the kind of thing that is going to lead to bitter new partisan fights. And it's going to be very ugly.
He's one of the brightest men in Richmond. It's just a travesty that this happened this way.
He's a gentleman. He's someone who grew up working as a manufacturing job holder. He went into the AFL-CIO and rose to the presidency and worked very well with Republicans and Democrats as the chief of the AFL-CIO. He is an intelligent and kind man, so it was particularly cruel what happened. But you know, the House Republican Caucus decided that they were going to show that they aren't going to be pushed. So
thank
they push back.
I appreciate that.
Hey, Paul, nice to hear from you.
Take care.
All right, 11:40 here on the Wake Up Call. Dial us up, 979-0919.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, the Montessori educational plan gives children the freedom to teach themselves, but the parents of the students at the Pine Tops Montessori School think the theory has gone too far. The Hook put Charlottesville City Council Clerk Jean Cox on the interview hot seat, wondering if she is the real head of City Council. And the plumbing expert shares tips on fixing your flusher. The Hook, excellent location, beautiful interiors, no taxes. And we want to thank whoever's card I can find next. We want to thank 45fix.com. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting, to decks and siding, it's 45fix.com. Immediate, no obligation estimates, available anytime. That's the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And don't forget, not that you ever would, but hang tight even after 12 noon, because George Bell will be here for Les Temps Perdue. It's the best of the 80s and 90s alternative. No Foreigner, Madonna, or Journey, but he will play Depeche Mode, Green Day, and the Sex Pistols. And requests are always welcome. That's Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only on WNRN. That's right, I'm only supposed to read each one of these once, not twice like I attempted. What you got, Bob?
You know, it really wasn't a bad session. It's not over yet. I think the small stuff counts. You know, the small stuff that was done down there, you're going to have 700-some, 800-some bills going to Governor Kane. He's going to sign them, all but a handful, and he'll offer a few amendments. And, you know, they'll have a reconvened session back on April 19th, by which time no one expects them to have a budget deal, by the way. But there will be a reconvened session to consider the governor's vetoes and amendments of the legislation that's passed so far. Every local delegate, every local senator had some good bills down there that got passed. It was, for most people, a good session. They just couldn't get the big work done. They couldn't get the heavy lifting on the budget done. And that's going to take them, I think, until the end of May.
But aren't they starting to give themselves that image of the guys who can't get the big work done? I mean, this is, as you said, I think the third straight budget session when they couldn't do it during the time frame in which the Constitution says they're supposed to. I mean, once you start tossing out words like Constitution, then, and people say you're not meeting the Constitution, I mean, what is the average citizen supposed to think?
Everybody says the Republican Party is in charge of the General Assembly. What they don't realize, what a lot of folks don't realize, is there are two Republican parties down there. There's the Republican Party that controls the Virginia Senate. And the House guys like to call them the party of state government, because the House guys view the Senate Republicans as looking out first for state and local government. I mean, they run around saying that. And the Senate guys view the House guys as being just so parochially stuck on an ideological position that they aren't willing to compromise and work for the state's, general welfare. So, you know, you've got two very, very different Republican parties down there, and they're at loggerheads. The Democrats are kind of sitting on the sidelines with the governor, cheering on the Senate Republican Party and fighting ever more vicious and little petty ways with the House Republican caucus.
All right, 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks. Bob, I think almost everyone who reads the paper, who pays any attention to the state politics, knows that once again this year, the General Assembly made some effort at defining gays as being folks we don't want in our state.
Well, I wouldn't put it that way. What they did was they put a ballot initiative on the November ballot. There were 19 of these on ballots around the country in 2004. They have all been passed. Everyone expects the one to pass in Virginia, defining marriage as between one man and one woman. This is the kind of popular social issue that, conservative Republicans like to put on statewide ballots because it always passes. And I don't see any reason it wouldn't pass in Virginia. I don't think it says, you know, we don't want gay people in Virginia. I think it is not tolerant of, gay people. It is meant to be a slap in the face, but I don't think it says, you know, get elsewhere.
Do you think that that somewhere down the road, because we are, as you said, we are controlled by, currently by Republicans, and because of following other states with the more social restrictive issues, that we might join a state such as South Dakota in terms of abortion?
Yeah, it's interesting you should mention that. George Allen, our U.S. senator, and he'll be on the ballot as well as this gay, traditional marriage amendment, which can be viewed as an anti-gay marriage amendment. George Allen was on Meet the Press this morning for half an hour with Senator Biden of Delaware, and he was asked, what do you think of the South Carolina law? That was just signed by the governor out there to do away with all abortions except to save the life of the mother. I mean, it doesn't have a rape or an incest exception. And, of course, it's meant to go up to the Supreme Court and test the new court and redefine abortion rights in this country. George Allen's answer on Meet the Press this morning was, I think the state should be free to do whatever they darn well please, to which Tim Russert came back and said, well, if they define abortion rights as okay for abortion on demand through the ninth month, would you go along with that, Mr. Allen? And George kind of looked like he didn't want to answer that question, but he said yes, I think the state should have the right to set any abortion policy that they want. I personally, he went on to say, would favor an exception for rape and an exception for incest. And then they talked about parental notification as an exception. But you know, George Allen is just about at the South Dakota law, not quite. I think it's going to be a big debate in 50 states pretty soon, because I think the Supreme Court, as it's now constituted, is going to open it back up to the states more.
So do you see this becoming a referendum in Virginia? Do you see it becoming a...
As long as the Republican Party controls... Which Republican Party, you ask? As long as a Republican Party controls the General Assembly... I think there's a good chance that Virginia will continue to try to get more restrictive abortion laws on the books. I don't think it'll happen in a referendum. I think it'll happen in the General Assembly. Right now, there is a committee in the Senate Education and Health Committee, chaired by Senator Russ Potts, that on 8-7 and 9-6 votes always kills off the House-passed legislation that gets to it every year that says, let's restrict abortions more. Senator Potts isn't going to be there forever. That committee isn't going to be forever able to kill those House-passed bills. And they pass the House by a wide margin. They get Democrats voting for them. They get almost all the Republicans voting for them. Virginia is a socially conservative state. And one of these days, they're going to further restrict abortion. Right now, the Virginia Senate has a committee that stops those bills.
We are talking about the 2006 Virginia General Assembly here on The Wake Up Call with the Daily Progress political columnist Bob Gibson. Feel free to dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. Stu is out there answering the phones. All right, so we brought up George Allen. Let's bring up Mark Warner to go with him.
Are you looking for Virginia to produce two nominees for the presidency in 08? Is that what you're looking for?
Well, I guess that's my question, is do either of them have realistic chances?
George Allen is viewed as one of the top two or three most likely Republicans to win the 2008 Republican nomination. Among insiders in Washington alone in the Republican Party, he's the number one choice. Among people who vote in Republican primaries, he is the number one, number two, or number three choice right now. He's in a very good position to get the Republican nomination for president in 2 years. He is in very good position to win a second term this fall. There are two Democrats who will be on the June 13th primary ballot to be for the right to challenge him in 2006. But Harris Miller, one of those Democrats who is a lobbyist or recently retired as head lobbyist for a technology industry lobbying group, and James Webb, who is a former Navy secretary and former Navy secretary under former President Ronald Reagan, is a Democrat challenging Harris Miller in that primary. That's going to, yeah, that isn't on anybody's radar yet, but it's going to be a very interesting primary to challenge George Allen.
Let me ask you a quick question. Does it hurt George Allen or any candidate to run for something in 2006 while the other side of their mouth is trying to raise money for leaving that position in 2008?
No, and you've raised the two key words, raise money. George Allen spent 2 years raising money for his fellow Senate Republicans who were on the ballot across the country for re-election. He knows all the money people in the Republican Party, and he knows the Republican Party base.
He had a big job, although I can't think what it was.
Republican Senatorial Committee chair. So basically, he was the guy who had to go out and raise the hundreds of millions of dollars.
He shook all the right hands.
He shook the right hands and went into the right deep pockets.
Now, okay, so you say that he's one of the top three.
Oh, for sure.
Maybe one of the top one or two.
He could be one of the top two.
Does it help or hurt that Virginia is his background? I mean, I'm assuming that he tried to help the Republican gubernatorial candidate.
He did.
Didn't get elected.
Jerry Kilgore was his protege. He put Jerry Kilgore in as his Secretary of Public Safety when he was governor, and he promoted Jerry Kilgore, backed him all along, and campaigned for him to be governor in an election that Northern Virginia largely turned and suburban Virginia largely turned to Tim Kaine by a fairly large margin.
I mean, both of our current and our previous governor have been Democratic, both during the time frame of which George Allen has been a Republican senator.
That gets back to the problem that Republicans have, that there is not one unified, united Republican Party. The Republican state party apparatus, which George Allen put in place, is very much aligned with the anti-tax increase crowd that controls the House of Delegates. So George has the party machinery behind him. He has the larger grassroots of the Republican Party and the House caucus folks behind him. George is going to be a very formidable candidate in a number of southern states. Most presidents who have been elected recently have done very well in southern states. So, you know, George is very well positioned for this. Mark Warner is also very well positioned. In fact, there's a very complimentary piece about him. I was just reading it before the show this morning in the New York Times Magazine today. He's the cover story, Mark Warner is. And basically the gist of the cover story in the Times today is that Mark Warner is the anti-Hillary. He's put himself in position to be the guy to stop Hillary Clinton, if anyone can. And there are many Democrats who don't think anyone can stop Hillary Clinton from getting the nomination. But there's a race among six or eight people to be the anti-Hillary, and Mark Warner is in first place in that race.
All right, we'll get to that in a second. I have to let all the funnies leave my head. I do want to thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support today. They're at the corner of Mead Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. All right, 11:54 here on the wake-up call. Time for, I don't know, another call. If you want to be the person to make it, 979-0919. 1-877-967-6762. That's 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS on the toll-free line. As we talk with Bob Gibson about Virginia politics, we sort of moved on from the General Assembly session. We'll take your call if you have a question or a comment about that. Now we're talking about George Allen and Mark Warner and their possibilities of being presidential nominees in 2008. So, Bob, you talk about Mark sort of being the anti-Hillary and his possibility in that. What makes him the anti-Hillary? I mean, what's positive about that?
He has a very good pitch. Now, Mark Warner is relatively unknown in the nation. You know, being Virginia governor doesn't mean that very many people outside Virginia know who you are. So he has a great task of getting known elsewhere in the country. But among Democratic Party activists, he is increasingly well-known and respected. He has a good pitch. Mark Warner's pitch is, do you want to nominate another Democrat who gets 16 states, the 16 blue states, and then has to do a triple bank shot, as he puts it, to get that 17th state, either Ohio or Florida, and win the nomination? And then what's the nomination worth? You know, if you're only appealing to the Democratic Party base, what's the nomination worth?
Right, if you get the 50.5%...
what kind of a president would Hillary
number.
Clinton be? Would she be a unifier? Would she be somebody who the country could rally around in a time of international turmoil? So he's got this message that basically says the Democratic Party should be out there appealing to small town and rural voters as well as the traditional Democratic Party base. And that's a very strong message that a lot of party insiders like to hear. I have no idea if it's going to be successful because the party base is who votes in the party primaries, and the party base seems to like Hillary Clinton just fine.
So he's playing off his 2004 budget term when he got the Republican moderates to step over to his plan.
And there are a lot of Republicans who are mad at those Republican moderates still for doing that. So he left office with an 80% approval rating, which is almost unheard of. Yeah, very, very popular governor. So popular that he swept Tim Kaine in behind him, which is another feather in his cap. Tim Kaine was not terribly well known before he campaigned for governor. Lieutenant governor is not a position from which get a lot of headlines. So Tim Kaine basically won on Mark Warner's coattails, and that's another reason that Democrats look at Warner as a strong Southern former governor.
All right, this is 91.9 WNRN Charlottesville and 89.9 WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst. Lynchburg, the final few moments with Daily Progress political columnist Bob Gibson. Is Mark Warner known, or how well is he known and liked amongst the Washington, D.C. insiders? You said nationally, and I'm assuming you mean with the voting citizen, that he has a lot of work to do. But how about inside the Beltway sort of thing?
They know him and they like him. For one thing, inside the Beltway is about half Virginia. So, he was always in the headlines in Washington because he was always, as governor of Virginia, engaged in some fight with the Republicans who control the General Assembly. So, you know, Mark Warner is a very known creature inside the Beltway, and a lot of Democrats like him there because he's viewed as his business background is respected. The fact that he can bring parties together to craft a compromise is respected. You know, these are things that that the party insiders really do respect.
All right, we got about 45 seconds left, so quick, simple answers. The percentage chance of George Allen being the Republican candidate?
Close to 50-50, not quite, but, you know, he's up there. The primaries will determine that, and he is in a great position to appeal to the people who vote in Republican primaries.
How about for Mark Warner? What's his chance?
I think the Times piece today is correct in saying that he is the top among eight people who are trying to challenge Hillary. Whether he maintains that position depends on a lot of things, and it's harder for him because he isn't as well known.
So we could be Virginia, the state, the mother of presidents, could have another one.
Pregnant with twins.
All right. Bob, thank you so much for coming on today. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
I'll be out of town next week, boys and girls, back to Las Vegas for March Madness. Pete Ronayne will be here talking about the Virginia wine industry, what they're doing right and wrong and marketing and some of the new rules that came out of the General Assembly. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.rlc.net. The wake-up call is produced by Catherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.